This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The aftermath of every social revolution brings about change. Cultural norms and landmarks shift as our minds and hearts expand beyond the familiar. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose in the land of the living. This is our time to renew, revive, and restore the hope lost to the busyness of life. This is our time to dig again and rebuild from the storms of our past on a solid footing that holds. Welcome to The Foundation.
The Foundation.
The Foundation of Hard Grant is brought to you by Alive, Bahamas Bus and Truck, the Bahamas Football Association, the Bahamas Professional Golf Association, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, and Wendy's.
The Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation.
The Foundation. Foundation. Oh, so it's the foundation. Foundation. Oh, so it's the foundation.
It's the foundation that's rocking the nation. Howard Grant's the host, Guardian Radio Station. 96.9, 12 to 2 is the time. You can call the show or use the text line. Yeah, he educates, he informs. He goes against the norm. He's really got that zeal. Plus, he's a child of God.
Foundation. It's the foundation, foundation, so it's the foundation, foundation.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant in your company, the foundation. I don't know, I just needed echoes. Don't fight me. It's a beautiful Thursday. Just got my hair cut. I feel it mad special. It is an exciting day. Always happy to be in your company to kind of really chop it down and talk about some things that we're doing out here. There's a great deal. You know that it's Thursday, and always on Thursday, it is Small Business Thursday. So get yourselves prepared to kind of do what you do as it relates to being able to listen in. I got a text the other day. Someone says, Howard, a few weeks back, you had someone come on to talk about cleaning furnitures and stuff. I need someone to do this. So I said, okay, no problem. I'll be able to do that. So if you want to be a part of that, I'd love you to hit me up on my text. 8270111 on my cell phone, 8270111, and we can get into that. You know, always on Thursday, as we touch the newspaper, make sure you pick up your Guardian newspaper. Thursday, May 4th, the information's in there. I know you guys want to dive deeper into. I got like 6 or 7 calls this morning. How would you see the ruling that came down? Oh my God. So we're going to be talking about the Chief Justice orders demolition of 2 shantytowns, and also the ruling as it relates to children born to Bahamian men. We're going to have that conversation, I think, maybe on the second hour. Let's try that. Let's see if we can be able to do that. But always, at this particular time, we look at this and touch the paper, and it gives me this sort of nostalgic sort of appreciation to be in the land of the living. It always does that. And I don't know. I guess I'm old people's children. As I do that, I'm thinking about our mortality and how we find ourselves in this sort of position. Mr. Bullitt, I see you calling me. Yes, sir. That was them. They call for you. I send them to you. I always think about our mortality as we get to this kind of a pace and space when we're looking at the obituaries and think about the fickleness and, you know, the vapor that is life. And we always do that. And it's hard to kind of deal with this transitional period. A lot of persons have passed away. We've seen Al Dillard in his particular capacity pass away. We see some great names. Ronnie at Bristol has passed away. And a lot of persons are dealing in one level or the other with some death or transition. And in that time, I always try to be able to give you suggestion, some persons that you can be able to hold on and lean on that has been through this more than once. Butler's Funeral Homes and Crematorium. I want you guys to give them a call and reach out to them to assist you with this sort of a transition, this stepping into a new space and era in your life. You want to be able to talk about that. I want to thank you so much for being able to tune in today and being able to chop it down. I have one or two things that we have to get out today and talk about those things that I'm more excited than anything because I've done something with these guys before. When we were under, you know, another umbrella, the PS called me down. We did some training. We did some stuff like that within this particular division when they were a ministry unto themselves at this point. But now we see them amalgamated under the office of the Prime Minister coming to tell us about some, you know, transitional stuff that they're doing, a time and a period that is. I'm going to give it to, an opportunity to them. We're talking with none other than Disaster Management Unit in the office of the Prime Minister, Mr. Dwight Bradley King. He says, everybody calls me Bradley Howard. He says, Dwight Bradley King, he's here with us. He's the training and disaster management person. And also Ms. Alicia Pinder, who is the Director General at the Red Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, say good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Actually, I'm with the Ministry of Works. At the Ministry of Works.
Let me fix this then.
Thank you for the clarification.
You did tell me that, Jana. Yes. I write it down. Ministry of Works.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so kindly for being this man.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. You're a good, decent man. I appreciate you being able to do that. And Ms. Pinder, good afternoon to you. Say good afternoon to the Bahamas.
Good afternoon. A pleasant good afternoon to everyone.
It's so wonderful to have you all in here. I want to talk about everything that's happening over at the Disaster Management Unit in the Office of the Prime Minister. But, you know, my curiosity is piqued. How is this merger between the Ministry of Works and the Red Cross to be able to speak about disaster management? Talk to me about it.
Interesting question. Of course, as you know, I think the people at the ministry itself would probably be best to talk about that. But mm-hmm. what I can say is this. There is a new act has been passed, mm-hmm. and that will facilitate or mandate a merger between the two key agencies, the mm-hmm. responsible disaster management for the nation. That is the National Emergency Management Agency, NEMA, mm-hmm. as well as the Disaster Recovery Authority, DRA. Mm-hmm. They're going to merge to form a new unit, which will then work together. So they'll be working as one unit now. And I think that's the major change that people will notice from other things. There's going to be a lot of PR, I understand, or somewhat to facilitate
as that. As I roll it out. Is it something that's going to happen this year? Can we look forward
to
it within this year? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm advised that it's going to be happening very soon. In fact, in preparation for the hurricane season.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So tell me about your role and capacity. Tell me about training and disaster and, you know, how you fit in this from the Ministry of Works.
Okay. Well, my context, the Ministry of Works has for decades now been a key player in the whole disaster management spectrum and regime. Mm-hmm. Our job mainly, as most people know, we are the government agency responsible for infrastructure development and all the physical development elements, both in terms of design, implementation, maintenance, and regulation. Okay, we employ a lot of engineers, architects, quantity surveyors, and technical people who are responsible for several things that the public may not understand, be aware of, but I think it's very important. First of all, whenever a hurricane is threatening, we're responsible for securing government buildings. We're the ones who go and hit a hurricane, and when the map says, okay, it's coming, we go around and make sure all the government buildings are secure, those assets secure.
Nationwide?
In terms of, Nassau, on the islands, the local government councils are responsible for those buildings, except for our government buildings. Mm-hmm. Of course, we help them as well, the ones where you have offices. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing. What you also do, damage assessment. The one we're probably most known for is damage assessment. We're the ones who go out, send out teams, and do the physical damage assessment. This building is destroyed. This building is, flue shingles blow off. And we go around, we assess the buildings nationwide. We send teams out after the hurricane. They use an arm, they go around and visit each site, and they go around and they do initial damage assessment And from that, it's generated how bad is the damage, and you try to come up with some rough estimate. Obviously, it's not going to be accurate to the penny at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Enough for the Prime Minister and Cabinet to make a decision as to funding in terms of how much will he need and where will it come from. Should it be, can it be local? Do we need to seek assistance? Okay. I think that's the one that's most critical in terms of how bad is the damage physically. Now, we don't do the assessment, psychological and social. That's social services and the other EFF, they do that. Okay. We had under NEMA, the current structure is that there's a subcommittee called EFF 3, Public Works and Engineering. Under that comes all the corporations, okay, BPL, Water and Sewage, BTC, Alive, and that grouping is responsible for physical infrastructure. There's another committee that deals with the socio-psychological, headed by social services. We had the physical engineering and public works subcommittee, for lack of a better term. It's called an ESF, Emergency Support Function. Social services does the socio-psychological other sides, Simon, and I'm sure they normally get interviewed as well.
You know, it's a wonderful thing that you say that, you know, sometimes we are so wrapped up in the need to be able to get back to normalcy and trying to be able to ensure that we secure ourselves. We don't understand that there's two arms. There is both a physical arm to ensure that, to take an assessment of the damage, so forth and so on. But there is an intangible, there is an emotional, a spiritual, this kind of disposition that you have. And I'm sure that the Red Cross can be able to tell us a little bit more about that.
Exactly.
Ms. Pinder, talk to me about the Red Cross's role as it relates to disaster management and whatnot.
Of course, yes. Historically and traditionally, the Red Cross internationally serves as auxiliaries to the governments of their respective countries.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, disaster in all of its varying forms has been something that we have been a major part of. For the Bahamas, we sit as a part of the NEMA board, which is all of the disaster agencies that come under that umbrella. You know, we have regular consultative meetings and preparation and all of that at the end of each month. Disaster, it usually takes the form of weather-related when it's major in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a huge undertaking that it takes a lot of agencies to come together to be able to effectively manage it. And so Red Cross has its role in the management, in the response, in the preparation of disaster. So we play a part before, definitely during. A lot of people are quite aware that we provide aid and support of some in some respect, and then in the aftermath, which we saw a lot of it in our last major disaster.
You know, Hurricane Dorian, I think it was a major, major disaster that where we had not only local support, we had NGOs, we had external persons come in, we had, it felt like, you know, the cavalry kind of swooped in. What was NEMA's role or disaster management in that particular perspective? Because this is, it wasn't pronounced yet. Your Ministry of Disaster Preparedness Management and Reconstruction was not necessarily pronounced until post-Dorian. But as the Permanent Secretary Smith will be able to tell you, that there have always been a disaster desk. There's always been this sort of an arm. So what was the role during the thick of what we saw?
Okay, if I may. NEMA is responsible primarily for preparation, mitigation, and immediate response. Okay? In other words, NEMA, understand this. NEMA is a consortium of all the government agencies, as Ms. Pinder was saying. Okay? Just think of any function necessary to the country, everything from tourism to animal care. There are 14 of these subcommittees, and through those 14, and I can show it to you if we had time, we cover every aspect. And what happens is that during the hurricane, the agencies come here, they're the representatives, they sit there, they receive inputs, they do outputs, they say, okay, this tree is falling, for example, across this road. Ministry of Works mobilizes, and I'm responsible for calling, hey, someone go there, the road, okay? Social services does their thing, health does their thing, tourism does their thing, foreign affairs does their thing. And you have these people in that building on Gladstone Road. Most people know this. But the people are actually there doing this. They stay there.
You can need a bigger building.
For the hurricane.
Because I look at that like, because I was a part of the NGO arm being in Moses after Dorian, right?
Well, yeah.
And I said, wow, so many persons.
It's a story behind that too. But it's not a small thing, but there is a need for, you know, for either another building or building. Yeah. But I guess there'd be another conversation. Mm-hmm. And so NEMA manages all of that. During, for example, the Met Office, they're a key player in NEMA. They're in that building. Mm-hmm. When you see those forecasts come, they send the people in the NEMA building and they get a forecast right there. They have the computers, the internet, and most of that information came directly from in the NEMA building where Met has it set up. Mm-hmm. And all the people there, so during the hurricane, they stay there. And afterwards, they stay there coordinating. So NEMA's role is like an umbrella against overall management mm-hmm. of all those aspects. And the people are there. NEMA's like a quarterback for the various roles. Mm-hmm. You have the wide receiver, the fullback, the halfback. Mm-hmm. So NEMA coordinates all of that. And each of us fills that role. Red Cross, there's a NGOs, but there's the social service, they will include them. There's one for physical structure. And if you permit me later on, I can tell you there are five other roles that ministers play. But I know you have certain things you want to do, and I'd love to get to that.
No. Well, you know, I only get in your business. Well, what I say that is because the community at large has a tendency, politics actually label us in a particular manner where we say we're quick to forget. And it's very important that you lay out the foundation and say the importance of these particular organizations. It's nothing to do with politics. It's everything to do with the necessity of these organizations and sort of the unity. And me working very closely with NEMA during a time of national, I feel like everyone who could and who had that sort of pricking in their spirit, they found their way down to Gladstone mm-hmm. Road in one way or another, calling from the family of Ireland, saying, how can I help? How can I help? How can I help? For what happened in East Grand Bahama and in North Africa, right?
And that's good. It just has to be coordinated. Trust me, both of us could talk at length about that.
I want to ask you about
coordination. But I'm sure you want to get to other things. We could talk at length about that. But
I want to ask you about coordination because I know we can touch on some other stuff. We can extend it just a little taste for you guys. But I want to ask you about coordination because one of the things that we've seen is that it could be a little bit of an enormous task, especially of a significant natural disaster like a hurricane. It can be an enormous task. Dorian mm-hmm. proved that to us. What is the organizations collectively, the 14 arms and the subcommittees that have, what are you doing to be able to incorporate the possibility that there is, a storm of that magnitude? Again, what has changed mm-hmm. over the past few years to say that you can be able to do something different?
I mean, we learned a lot from Hurricane Dorian.
Yeah.
Okay. And one of the outcomes was, in fact, this revised act, mm-hmm. okay? I'll tell you that's one of the things that we do, whereas the coordination between NEMA and the DRA, they were both in place before Dorian, but the necessity of even more tighter coordination probably is one of the things that may have driven the act. We also have a situation where we have a closer relationship with the local government. As we speak, this morning, there's an exercise going on called Restore Island Keys. They flew in local administrators and councillors from the islands, and they're in the new building right now, learning, training, working together. So when they go back to their various islands, they will know how the thing functions. They see how we work. We do a dry run. And this week, that dry run is going on, and they're here. They know, here's how you do it. So when they go back now, they have a better idea in their own EOCs how to make that coordination. That was intentional because we have that. The building code is being revised as we speak. A new building code is being produced. And that will take in effect things like climate change and flooding and all like that.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I was in Hurricane Andrew. And, my family, we got stuck in the United States of America. And when we emerged from this hotel, Grammy praying all night, me praying all night, the wind was licking all over the place. And there was significant disaster as it relates to South Florida was gone. If you remember Hurricane Andrew in the early 90s, right?
Very well.
And when we came home, it was bad, but it wasn't like horrible. And that's exactly. when I learned about our building code at that particular time. That's 150 mile hour winds, locking down your trust, so forth and so on. And I said to myself, wow, this is an amazing thing. We saw South Florida really replicate and try to duplicate this sort of concept, what we had here in the country. And now you're saying to me, you're revising that?
Again, yes. It's to improve it. Let me give you two vignettes that'll help with that, okay? First of all, the South Florida Building Code at that time, our code actually exceeded the South Florida Building Code in terms of wind loading. After Andrew, they brought theirs up to the level of Yacht, but we were already there, okay? Secondly, you've heard the Saffir-Simpson hurricane scale, right? Herbert Saffir was a civil engineer who developed the scale, okay? When we were developing the first building code, which was launched in 82, we actually retained him.
Really?
So the same guy who developed the South...
Who's telling these stories, man? I didn't notice.
It's the same guy who helped us develop our original building code.
Wow, wow.
That's how serious. And that's why the Bahamas recovered so quick in hurricane, because we have a very strong building code. It was the first one in the Caribbean. We believe it's the... really is one of the strongest ones in the region, if not the world.
It got to be, because it's the one that's the most expensive. If you got bad blocks and this and that.
Exactly. And most people complain until after the next hurricane. Okay?
Yeah.
But trust me, that's why we recover quickly. And you cannot measure how much money we would save, because you can't measure that. Okay? And then and now what's happening, we're not going to sort of lower the standards, just that you have to take into things like, for example, the whole climate change thing. They're certain, they're trying to incorporate that paradigm. In the last code previously, there was no official requirement for the handicapped and all like that. The original code now has that. Architects are redesigning for it.
Really?
But over time, you get better. So this code is going to die this to even better now. But we have an excellent code now.
Yeah.
But this new one, the idea is to make it even better.
Okay. Ms. Pinder, I want to ask you about what the Red Cross has learned over this dispensation, over this time. What have you done or identified to do better in the midst of disaster, or that could even assist you with your day-to-day operations that you do here on the ground now?
All right, yes. Every year, we prepare. We prepare for storms. We pray for the best, but we prepare for the worst. But technically, we never really know what the worst looked like.
I pray to God we don't ever know.
Right. Dorian, though, showed us a lot of gaps in the ways that we think. And also the things that we share in terms of preparation before a disaster.
Yeah.
We talk about building codes that are such a great strength, but then the amount of water that came through during Dorian, we looked at ways that you could even be safe within your home if it is taking water. For instance, devices. If you have small children and if you're in a home, you don't expect for it to be overtaken by water, but if it does, do you have devices that will keep your child afloat as well as maybe even yourself? Because some houses, structurally, they were sound and everything was great, but they took in water. It may be proximity. You know, a lot of our communities, especially on the islands, are very, very close to water.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's the beauty of living on the island.
Yeah.
But then that's also the threat that you have to mitigate against. We looked at ways that people may have had to leave one area sheltering and how they prepared. You know, a lot of Bahamians, they want to be as comfortable as they can while they are in a storm. So, you know, you have on your little sandals or your flip-flops because it's comfortable. But what happens if you have to leave immediately? And so we had experiences where people said, you know, I had a wardrobe malfunction right in the middle of trying to get from one place.
It makes it sound like it was in the Super Bowl.
But the thing about it is if your clothing isn't right, if your shoe, and so we looked at things like that, flotation devices, life jackets. Even some people have been talking to us, and we've shared. If you can have something like that in your home, this is how you can maybe ensure that you prepare. Also, the way what is a safe room in your house? During Dorian, some people were swept out of their homes. We saw a lot of instances where people talked about that had to have been a tornado that passed. And the way that you prepare, if the wind is the strength or the consistency of a tornado, you prepare differently than if you're just thinking about battening your homes and ensuring that is. So what is your safe space in your home?
I want to ask you a few questions because you're jogging my memory. My mother-in-law and my father-in-law lived in Hudson Estate in Grand Bahama. My mother-in-law has since passed. But the stories that they told us, the water came in from the north side in Grand Bahama, right? Now, if you know Grand Bahama, Hudson Estate is at least 6 to 8 miles, almost 10 miles inland, right, from the northern shore. And the water came all the way to this constituency, this community. And it was up maybe about 4, 5, 6 feet in the house, right? They had to walk. They had to walk in this water, fearing their life. It felt like riptides in the water. And she's telling me about the stories, right? So when you start to talk about the importance of persons being able to prepare and ensure that you have the proper, you know, clothes on, don't just be casual in the house and think everything is okay. I want to talk to you about the fact that there are some communities in Grand Bahama also. I'm from Grand Bahama. Midshipman Road and other spaces. Mm-hmm. I think the now leader of the opposition, Michael Pintard, could be able to attest to that. The water would come all the way up to the roof. There are some people that there are stories that are going around that persons got trapped in the truss, in the ceiling. And they were beating on the roof and some persons couldn't. Maybe we lost one or two persons like this. So what education is being pushed forth, not just from a media standpoint, but really being able to inform the community about the importance of being able to be prepared mm-hmm. in these spaces?
Well, you'll be hearing a lot about different activities during this month. These interviews is one way, okay? Other things like having given out information, and I think we could probably, and some of it is going to be a matter of just PR like that. One example, for example, we tell people if you're going to always keep a hammer or something you can break through the roof of your house with. So
yes.
If you if you're up there, you want to be able to break out of that so you can get on top of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have a hammer, you don't have a, you know, the what do you call the thing?
Crowbar.
You really have a problem. It's better to have it than need it and not have it. And like you say, education, that's why this whole month, every year, is voted disaster preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen, of course, on Guardian Radio and others, the public service announcements, the list of hurricane shelters, that's going to be published so everybody knows where it is. The shelters have signs on them, so as you grow a community, you know where the shelter is, so you don't have to think where to run. The signs are already there permanently. So anyway, little things like that, I think that I'm realizing a lot of young people live on social media. So perhaps maybe we need to be more, maybe the social media presence can be a little more.
That's a good point that you make, because I want to ask you, Ms. Pinder. The truth is that parents tend to gravitate to the sort of relentless pushing of their kids. If the kids are learning about something, my baby is 4 years old. He come home yesterday. He said, Daddy, you know we learned about the four seasons, right? So I said, okay. And he kept doing it all day. I was like, listen, you need to stop. I know what the four seasons are, right? And he said, Daddy, you know, and he kept getting stuck. He don't know fall, right? So I say, fall, oh my God, right? Okay. But I say that to say that if we go into the schools and be able to talk about that to the kids can carry this message and watch the reformation in the homes, because parents have to gravitate toward, even if it's only to satisfy these particular children. Is the Red Cross thinking of doing anything like that?
We do go into communities, actually.
Yeah.
Some of the things, well, COVID was a different dynamic. And the outreaches that we did, generally, we couldn't do as much. But here's the thing. We talk about having a family plan.
Mm-hmm.
And a family plan is a deliberate attempt to ensure that your family knows what to do mm-hmm. in the event of a disaster mm-hmm. in your home of any magnitude. Thing is that, of course, young kids or kids can bring home messages to their parents, but parents actually need to be at a more advanced level where they are thinking, in the event that we are separated, this is where we mm. muster. This is meet us here. Mm-hmm. And so we won't be wondering where you are.
I like this.
If in the event that you get
I like this.
Separated, mm-hmm. What are your emergency contact numbers? Mm-hmm. Who do you call, even if it's someone out of the country? Mm-hmm. Like if you have an aunt who lives in Georgia, mm-hmm. right? We got a lot of calls doing Dorian. I can't hear a thing from my family, so and so. So give them a call. Make mm-hmm. sure that mm-hmm. they know. And so that alleviates a lot of fears, as well as that person is out of the range of danger, then two or three people may be calling them. Okay, I'm dad, I'm here at this place. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just got a call from mom, and the kids, they're at this place. And so that is the way you keep in constant contact. Mm-hmm. We want people to be also thinking about roads. Suppose you do have to leave. If you know a road is subject to flooding, mm-hmm. or if there's a tree or a utility pole that is crossing that road, what is the alternative way you get out of your community? Mm. You know, there are different ways, and most people can get out if you go a little bit over there and then you turn through this corner and then you come back and you end up back on East Street or mm-hmm. whatever. But these are things that you generally have to know and share. Family members need to know in advance.
I will put something on the table for both of you because I'm listening to you. And I think we have been blessed, and there has been a proverbial angel over this island of Nassau from at least from my inception, from I was born in 81.
Well, I can tell you something about that.
from 81, I know that we in Grand Bahama have suffered significant hurricanes, Long Island, Rum Key, Abaco, Eleuthera, Exuma, all the islands that surround Nassau has been, you know, touched in one way or the other. I want to know from you, with a true sense of honesty, whether or not there is a quiet fear that if something was to come to Nassau, most specifically, that our people may not necessarily be prepared. Mm-hmm. What do we do?
Okay, well, let me give you the background first of this. Historically, there is a reason why New Providence was chosen as the capital of the Bahamas, as mm-hmm. you know, originally with Eleuthera, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. Look at the map of the Bahamas. You have Nassau mm-hmm. in the middle there. You have the outline, the Atlantic Out Islands is this way, okay? Mm-hmm. Abaco, Eleuthera, et cetera, et cetera. On the other side, you have Andros and Bimini and the Berry Islands, mm-hmm. okay? And what you will find statistically is that most hurricanes come along, they skirt the islands, and they leave. So back when in the Royal Colony, that island was typically chosen because they know that the other islands get hit more so than Nassau. And statistically, you look over 100 years, last 100 years or so, the island of Abaco, just as an example, has been hit more by hurricanes than anywhere else in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Well, not just the Bahamas, mm-hmm. the Caribbean. So Abaco, if they take a lot of brunt of it. I guess why they built so good. But Nassau, It tends to not get as often. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason why it's the capital.
Mm-hmm. So is there this sort of a quiet fear?
Yeah. I think there was, in my opinion, certainly before Dorian. Dorian was one of the blessings, the few blessed silver linings in the back of Dorian.
Wow.
Okay. Was before it was this, you know, he didn't hate us.
He'll be all right. Like that. Yeah. God got us, baby.
Yeah. And after Dorian, Matthew kind of was able to scare as well, because that's good in New Providence. After Dorian.
Hurricane Jaquan also.
Yes. Okay, the level of...
I make a joke, but go ahead.
Okay. Right? The level of awareness is like, hey, we got to really, this thing is serious. Because they heard the horror stories from their relatives in Abaco and Freeport and all like that. And actually, we're seeing with people. So I think it's a lot more awareness now. Mm-hmm. But over time, you tend to slide back over time.
Mm-hmm. And that is why I'm saying that we have to be intentional.
Yeah.
adults need to be intentional.
Yeah.
Young people need to be intentional.
Yeah.
If you hear the rhetoric, I'm often very surprised when the Met and all of the agency put out a precautionary to prepare for a storm, and people go and they buy all of their supplies last minute, mm-hmm. but all the same, and mm-hmm. and then Nassau is not impacted. Mm-hmm. A lot of people complain, and then I bought all of this food, and then I did all of this, which is what you should be prepared for anyhow.
Don't mind them. They didn't eat all the children's snacks before the storm even.
Yes. The thing is, though, is that take it serious enough.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people during a storm, they will stock up on things that are, you know, a little bit too much of things that will take away their focus if they have to really respond to disaster.
You're being as decent as possible.
As
I recognize
decent,
that. I realize
decent
that.
As I
but the alcoholic beverages are unnecessary in the storm.
Yes.
You see
yes.
those body.
Yes, yes.
Also, I would also tell you, though, besides alcoholic beverages, and people do this a lot, they buy sugary and salty snacks.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
a draw on water supply. If your water supply is being utilized more because you're putting all of this stuff that in your body, salt or sugar, your body automatically becomes thirsty because it wants to neutralize that excessive in your bloodstream or in your system. And that's a draw on the water. And then if the water supply is cut off, that's the draw.
Now you're dehydrated.
Your, mm-hmm. And you're also
My
your
God.
Bathroom systems may have a limited amount of water. Because if you go in too often because you're drinking mm-hmm. stuff or eating stuff that causes you to have a draw on that supply.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just to be intentional and sit down mm-hmm. and think about it. As a family, sit down and think and have your plan. And you mm-hmm. know what are the vulnerabilities in your home, around your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Discuss it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to take this quick commercial break. You guys are not going anywhere. You still got to be able to tell me about some specific things that I think you're going to be doing something
yes.
on May 27th. Let me take this quick commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, we're in here with none other than Disaster Management Unit from the Office of the Prime Minister, Mr. Dwight Bradley King from the Ministry of Works, and Ms. Alicia Pinder for the Red Cross. We're going to be right back after this.
The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
At Wendy's, we are different.
We don't just use beef.
It's fresh, never frozen.
Our burgers are square because we never cut corners.
Served hot off the grill with fresh lettuce, tomatoes, onions, and American cheese.
We believe in fast food done right.
Always serving fresh, never frozen beef.
Order a hot, juicy Dave single, double, or triple.
Made with fresh, never frozen beef.
Now only at Wendy's. Different inside and out.
Ready to step into the future? From your front door to the backyard and everywhere in between. See and speak to whoever's there with Ring Video doorbells and security cameras now available at Alive. Protect what matters most, all from one easy app. Available in your Google or Apple Play Store. Visit bealive.com/ring to learn more. We are Alive.
Get ready for the ultimate beach soccer showdown. The Bahamas Football Association presents the 2023 CONCACAF Beach Soccer Championship from May 8th to 14th. Head to the Beach Soccer Stadium beside the Sydney Poitier Bridge and witness the action. Cheer on the Beach Boys as they compete against powerhouses from 11 countries across the region, like Mexico, El Salvador, and the USA. Gather your friends, family, and flags and cheer on our Beach Boys. Admission is absolutely free. For more information, visit BahamasFA.net. Don't miss out on all the action at the 2023 CONCACAF Beach Soccer Championship, May 8th to 14th. See you there.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. Foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant and your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful Small Business Thursday, chopping it down with none other than Disaster Management Unit from the within the office of the Prime Minister, talking to us about preparation, taking it serious, and really educating us about what needs to happen and what goes into this. Right now, I'm going to let Mr. King talk to us about the list of roles and the essential services and functions for those particular areas. Right. And then, Ms. King, you can go in after
that. Thank you. Very quickly, we talked earlier about how we secure government buildings. We talked about how we do damage assessment, physically. The other thing we do, appeal known for, is we clear the roads. We're responsible clearing the roads after the hurricane. Obviously, and I personally say this, no one's going to go, once we secure and our staff goes home, no one's going to come out in the middle of a hurricane to clear the road for you, okay? But after the hurricane, we go out and we move the trees and like that. Initially, the main road.
This heavy what you're saying, you know. I can't even expound on how heavy it is because people come out in the eye of the storm sometimes.
Yeah.
And they want to ride around to see, to assess damage themselves. They don't work for Ministry of Works.
Every time. No, okay, every time.
Go ahead.
And that's why the vehicles are there. In fact, even the oil clear, we don't have time to discuss that, but the way the oil clear has a certain definition as well, but we don't have time for that. We clear the roads. We do storm drainage and tree trimming after, like, we clear the storm drainage roads. There are more than 200 storm drains on this island. And we have a team that continually goes on, not during the hurricane season, clearing those roads so when you need it. And we clear trees, listen to me in a cafe now, for the government, around government buildings and ones that might pose a danger to the public. We ain't gonna clear you and kill you on your private property and cut branch of your tree, okay?
You say, listen to me clearly now. Okay. We ain't coming to your house to cut down your big cadet tree, right?
No. Look at that, okay? Now, there is a unit. We coordinate with utility companies. You know, we are the head of our subcommittee. The heads, the intertechnical committees, along with that is BPL, BTC, Alive, Water and Sewage, several of the agencies did that. Mm-hmm. We coordinate. They have their own plans, of course, but we coordinate that with them. That's our ESF3. We inspect the hurricane shelters. When the social service head subcommittee does the public hurricane shelter, every year they review this and come with a new list. That's why every year see the list. Some put on the list, some go off the list. Our job.
You got to take some of them off the list. They got crack at the bell course 3 miles long. Yes. Anyway, go ahead.
Every year we do that, and our job is to assess the structural, mechanical, electrical part of that. Now, social service, there's another component of that. Building very structurally sound, but it still may not qualify because it doesn't have, say, certain facilities that are needed. You may have to, you don't have to walk to use the bathroom out in the hurricane from building A to building B to use the bathroom. So that's to have certain things. And we do the engineering part of it as a part of that committee to make sure it is structurally sound and has the mechanical, electrical aspects. Take it at we as part of the committee. Mm-hmm. Then, finally, we do the standby generators for government buildings. We test it, check all the generators, make sure in the public buildings now generators work.
I like your specification. I like how you are specific in indicating because there is a social expectation that the government should take care of all this.
Yeah, that's getting me started with that.
Including pay for my house.
Yeah, that. Yeah, but and that's the DRA.
You are facility, a decent man.
But no one's going to make you pay for your...
But we know that. But see, your technocratic capacity ain't going to lead me into that conversation. That's a different conversation.
Okay.
Right? And Ms. Pinder, I wanted you to be able to tell me about something that you started to talk to me about at the top of the hour about what y'all doing on May 27th. I think it was May 27th.
Yes, May 27th. The Disaster Management Unit and all of its components will be having a disaster exposition of sort. It's going to be on the Arawaki Heritage Site. That's just in the front of the fish fry area, the fenced-in area sometimes where people have fairs and all the likes.
There was the Red Cross.
Absolutely, had our event on the weekend. Right. And so it's here that we're inviting the public to come out. See, public awareness is great. Some people will not be reached by the regular means. Mm-hmm. However, once again, be responsible. Take it in your own hands. This will be an exhibition that shows what are some of the things that you need, what are some of the agencies that and what it is that they do. They will all have their items on display. There will be little giveaways as well. It'll be a fun time. So you can come out, go from the various stalls, get all the information that you need. Think about the things that make you not only safe as well as comfortable doing your stay if you have to be in a shelter or sheltering at home.
Okay, so that's May 27 Disaster Expo over at the Arawaki.
From 11 to 6 p.m.
11 to 6 p.m. Okay, yes. All day. Mm-hmm. All right, so if you bring the little children all day, you got some of the kids too?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. We don't like to have things unless we have something that attracts the kids.
Something that attracts the little children.
Yeah.
Okay, so May 27, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to be able to come down. I want to thank both of you, Mr. King and Ms. Pinder, for being able to come down and really expand on these things. I think there's a necessity for more conversation into, you know, the bare-bone truth of what happens pre, post, and during a storm. I think a lot of us are wrapped up in this. But God got me, baby. I can ride out the storm. I think faith without works is still dead. And I think we have the responsibility to be faithful, mm-hmm. but still be, apply ourselves to the work to prepare the next step in life. So I thank you so much for taking the time out to do that. I thank the disaster management for being able to send you guys down here. And I look forward, as we get closer to the hurricane season, to talk more about this preparation that we can take.
Great. Yes,
thank you also very kindly. Ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant. Take a commercial break, get to news, and be right back after this.
Foundation.
The Foundation. We'll be back right after this.
The Foundation. The Foundation.
There's nothing like the one and only Whopper at Burger King Nassau. That quarter pound of savory flame-grilled beef made your way with juicy tomatoes, fresh lettuce, crunchy pickles, and white onions on a soft sesame seed bun is burger bliss. Piping hot thick cut french fries and a Pepsi, and you have the ultimate classic combo that's sure to satisfy. Don't just get a burger, get the classic Whopper combo, available all day, every day at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Tired of paying too many bills and loan payments each month?
Shrink your monthly debt payments down to one easy payment with our debt consolidation loan.
It also has a built-in savings that pays you 5% interest.
Inquire about our debt consolidation loans today.
Call 356-7764.
Samantha's always on point. She doesn't miss a thing. When she signs up for any insurance policy, she reads all the fine print. She knows what's covered, what's not covered, and she's aware of her deductibles. When it comes to insurance, it pays to know your policy. Review every insurance policy so you know what you're covered for. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation. Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, live and in full effect, really being able to chop it down today. I am so happy to be in your company. And I don't know, I feel like we need to do a show called The Flip Side or The B Side. And for all, if you're young and you don't know about what The B Side is, it's just, you know, you turn it over, if you know about cassette tape, so forth and so on. The conversations after the official interview is the riveting conversation. And sometimes you have to be politically correct when you sit in these particular spaces, because you don't want to step on anybody's toes. You sit in here as a person who has the responsibility for being able to speak to a government or speak for a government, so forth and so on. These technocrats. But the truth is, there is a great deal happening in our country. And the line's going to be wide open, guys. I don't have anybody set up to be on the second part of the show. So I want you guys to kind of call in with me today. We're going to talk about some business and talk about some things like that. So if you want to take that avenue, you can do that. The lines are open, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Anywhere from the family of islands, 242-300-5720. That's a toll-free number. Okay, so don't call me and cuss me out about your texts and your minutes and so forth and so on no more. 242-300-5720, 422-4796. And what popped out of the conversation for me, you know how I am. Y'all hear me before. You know how I go as it relates to this particular thing. What popped out is education for me. I didn't want to get into too much of a conversation with those guys as it relates to the technical approach in terms of being able to utilize technologies to identify how we could be able to smooth this over. We know that there was a significant sort of bumps in the road, as it relates to the government and the procedures pre, post, and during Hurricane Dorian, more specifically, persons yelling at them to be able to create an app to ensure that we can identify persons who moved from one island to another. How do we identify them? How do we do this? How do we do that? You know, they had their responsibility, their role to be able to play today. And I didn't want to take them off that. I don't want to take them off their game. But so much stuff, I never scribbled on my paper. So much stuff popped out there. And one of the things that's really core for me is education. I believe that you ever been, you know, trying to skip rock? We used to go to Lovers Beach in Grand Bahama to skip rock. And we were always afraid to go in Lovers Beach, to go in the water. Because you take 4 steps and then you're in 20 feet of water in Lovers Beach, right? The sharks used to come up, so forth and so on. But it was a beautiful place to go and cut up with your girlfriend, right? Or your significant other. And just kind of sit out there and, you know, skip stones. The water would be so smooth at points, right? But there was a riptide sometimes underneath, right? Sometimes we have a tendency to just have a conversation about the surface and the beauty of the surface, but don't understand the churning beneath. These conversations that we're having about what needs to happen from a family perspective, from a community perspective, the education, the media, so forth and so on, means little if we don't really start in the next generation. There needs to be a catalyst that bubbles, an activist that bubbles from the school. Our kids need to know about this. As much as we can be able to talk about education and who needs to do this and do that and do the other thing, there's no one talking about financial literacy. No one taught Howard Grant about money. The only time I recognized that I need to be able to preserve money and so forth and so on is when I didn't have it. Talk to me, I can't even get no amen. No one taught me this in school. I had to go to college to get any semblance of this. And it was only through the level of accounting. It didn't talk to me about the necessity for being able to get out of this proverbial hole and this slum based upon, you know, my lot in life and what I was born into. Ain't nobody talked to me about that. If governments are serious about reformation, transformation, and growth in this country, you're going to have to teach, educate, empower the next generation. I can't take you serious. By being able to have a conversation about expanding education, doubling the budget for education, and still not talking about what money means to little black and brown children. Let's just be very clear about this. The only thing we understand, the sustainability that young people look forward to is the next check. And that travels through with us for life. We literally work from paycheck to paycheck, saving just enough till the next one reach. No one's teaching us. And then when we get old, we have this relentless dependency and screaming at NIB. Oh my God, I didn't work all my life, I pay NIB all my life. And come on, but no one taught us the importance of being able to create our own retirement plan. Let's have some conversations, guys. The lines are wide open. Let me take the first call on the line. First call on the line, go ahead.
Hey, good day. How you doing, Howard?
I'm good, man. What's happening with you?
I'm great, man. Boy, you flipped the subject on me, but I can still roll with that. But I had a question for your guest, what was it there just now.
They're gone.
And preparedness, hurricane disaster.
Put it on the table, I can ask them. I got their number.
Some interesting points, right?
Mm-hmm.
But still, I think Dorian was a prime example of worst scenario, if not more to come, worse than that. But that was a good ground for you to start on and see where you was at, maybe, to be. And one of the things I didn't hear them mention, because most of the time, NASA is very rarely hit direct. And plus, we have all the resources here in NASA.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Dorian, you know, they had where the people was asked to evacuate, but I guess some couldn't evacuate, and then some didn't understand the severity of it. So how do you... I was supposed to ask them this, like, and I have another question for those. So, but I was wanting to ask them what provisions they made to, like, if you have to evacuate people for housing them and plus transport, like, do you have, like, links with the major shipping companies and the Bahamas there and the different charter companies to mass evacuate people and house them and feed them when they get, you know, out of the immediate danger? So that was the question I had for them, because, I mean, I understand everything else was good, but...
On Thursday, and I'd like to be able to put this out there. On Thursdays when I have the guests in, sometimes the time is so, you know, it's a crunch time. It's only supposed to be 15 minutes, but I expanded it for them today because I wanted to ask some questions myself. But you could just text me that. Just text it next time and I'll read it for you. And especially if it's pertaining to this particular show, you know, sometimes persons are calling and telling me some other stuff. But, you know, that I don't normally take calls when I have my persons on Thursday. So I'll ask them. I'm going to talk to them about mass evacuations and sort of the preparedness. But they'll be back with us sooner rather than later, before hurricane season.
Okay.
So I got the question right here.
And on your subject now, right?
Mm-hmm,
and I agree with that, too. My mother always used to say one thing she regrets is not teaching us how to save and how to... I mean, we figuring it out as we go. You know what I mean? It's still a learning process because things have changed as it goes. But the basics of working and putting something aside, I remember my mother-in-law used to say, if you make dollar, keep one and wake off the other one. I mean, if you make $2, keep one and wake off the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions I have for you, Howard, that's good and fine, you know, as far as educating people. But it's still kind of tough even today for you to be able to say it. You understand? Where if you got a job right now making $350 or whatever, half of that go on getting back and forth to work and feeding yourself or whatever. God help you if you've got kids and everything else. So, you understand? That's really difficult. But one of the questions I had, you say you had an open line, is I really would like a conversation from us as to what, like, if we could come up with one idea for one of the, like, Abaco, any one of the islands or whatever, so we could start building on that idea as to make a national plan and make that a model for all the other ones to come. You understand? I'll hang up and listen now. I appreciate
your telephone call, my brother. Thank you so very kindly for that. The first part of what you said, I think that's why the conversation of livable wage is relentlessly being, hammered at socially for our politicians to recognize the importance of doing those things. I don't know, man. I'm so fed up with certain politicians and not being able to have the will to make the decisions to change the country. I don't believe that we need, these external nudges to be able to say, this makes sense. We are, you know, screaming relentlessly at those persons at the feet of Parliament to say to them there needs to be change in one way or another. But we have been met with the social disdain and the rhythm of the tradition that exists. So they hit us with the same, the government is doing absolutely wonderful. This is what we've done, in fact. right? But not necessarily being able to identify and isolate what's being done about this particular matter. Whilst there's social agitation for the fact that there needs to be an increase for members of parliament just to be able to survive, to be able to curb the subconscious desire to quell, to quench that subconscious desire to be able to get a little bit more, to subdue the idea that maybe I have to step out of my convictions and my positions just to take care of my family. We out here agitating for you all day. I mean, I don't know what other people. I, Howard Grant, agitating for you to get some more money. That $28,000 ain't nobody money. That Jesus, you can't buy four good suits with that and put gas in your car, right? I'm out here agitating for you because I don't want you to put yourself in a position where you have to, you know, compromise your convictions. But who's agitating for us to be able to get a minimum wage, a livable wage? Whilst administrations continue to be able to chair of this idea that we've waged to $250, what that could do for anybody? $1,000 a month? You know that rent has increased, food has increased, school education has increased. It costs you more money to send. Now, listen, we appreciate your incremental moves towards reform. We do. And if you can't do it as expedient as we desire, then articulate that. But there is a relentless push to change this country. And we want to be able to hear more about that. All right? Let me see if I can take a next telephone call. Caller, you're on the line with us live. Go ahead. Go ahead, caller. No? Guys, please give me a call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, anywhere from the family of violence, 242-300-5720, 242-300-5720, and you can be able to hit me up on the text line, 422-4796, that's 422-4796. We're live and in full effect today on this Thursday, just being able to chop it down. On Small Business Thursdays, somebody texts me and says, building codes don't matter, Howard. The Bahamas, building codes don't matter in the Bahamas, Howard. Hashtag shantytowns, right? Next texter came and says, Howard, great show as usual. I work in the architectural firm in the Bahamas, and I'm concerned not of the hurricanes, but of the tornadoes. I think we should start designing buildings with basements and make that standard for all newly built construction. You got to call me and tell me more about this. You got to call me and tell me more about this. You also have to call me and tell me the cost factor associated with this. You got to do that. Got to be decent and do that for me. Because if you know about these things, then you also know about our porous limestone in this particular position. You also know that if we dig, we could dig a well. We could dig a well and find water right there, right? You also know about that. I need to know more about these things. I need to know about the cost associated with it, whether or not we could be able to mitigate the cost of the limestone that we extracted, sell it, and be able to get something like that. If there would be some, we got to talk. It'd have to be an expansive conversation. It can't just be, let's make basements. It got to be strategic steps in identifying how this can be able to execute accordingly. You understand this? Because I often think about that. I do. But we are already at sea level or even below. And based upon the information that's coming out over the next 25 years, we may be under. So to talk about basements, when the first thing the water does is come rushing in, we got to be able to really strip the idea and talk about these particular things. Let me take a telephone call. Calling you on the line with us live. Go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon, Howard.
Good afternoon, my brother.
Sparky, yeah.
Hey, Sparky, what's up?
You know something, Howard? You know, I wonder sometimes. You don't have to go to the University of the Bahamas or off to college to get a master's degree in some of the things that I believe the common man on the street know happening around this country, you know. When it comes to our natural reserves and everything like here, now we know that foreigners are in here using and taking it out of our country and making money and selling it. We also know, without anybody having to tell us, that these lawyers around here in our Bahamas are lawyers for these same companies. Mm-hmm. Our certified accountants are accountants for these same companies. They don't want nothing to change because this is how they make their money. Mm. By being attorneys and accountants for these foreign companies registered in the Bahamas, we're just taking our stuff and making money. Why don't we take back our stuff and use our stuff for us?
Mm.
So we could benefit. We could live above the minimum wage. We could get the nice cars and the nice homes. And we don't have to be suffering till we die.
Mm. I hear you, Sparky. You're going strong today. I don't know. I mean, I won't say this. I really do. I really do. This morning, you know, barbershop talk is really, I have triggers. I do. I have some triggers, right? And when people talk about the BGC, y'all don't fight me. Please go with me. Understand what I'm saying. When people talk about the BGCSE, right? And then they equate that to education in our country, right? There's a couple of things that I look at. I look at the ultimate objective of being able to dive into this educational aptitude, to take this aptitude test, to see what my capabilities is locally, right? So we've gone to school, we've committed ourselves to these particular things. We have wrestled against the conditioning that says that our grandmothers and others say that, baby, if you need something, just let me know, I can make a call for you. So we wrestle against those particular things, but that exists in our minds. Oh man, I can go too deep with this thing, right? That exists in our minds. So we go to school, you get the education, especially during my time, because you didn't want to be able to show yourself incapable. Very competitive time I was living in, right? In the 80s, 90s, early 90s. Competitive time. You ain't gonna be the dumbest in class, not me. You see? So you do all of these particular things, and then you get to the 10th grade. And in the 10th grade, you start to prepare yourself. You go to JA, you go to Cadet, you go to GGYA. I think GGYA just came around. You go to Key Club, you do all these things to be able to prepare yourself. And then you ask yourself by mid-11th grade, 12th grade, for what? I don't know about y'all, that's what I ask myself. For what? What are we doing? Am I going to the States? Do I have money for this? Is my education good enough? Did I do well enough to be able to get a scholarship anywhere? What do I really want to do? And so you ask yourself these questions and you continue to be able to look for a job in the environment. So you get your good BGCSEs, and the only thing you do is fight for the other fellow's job with the BGCSEs for, you know, a clerical position, the position in the front office, so forth and so on, that doesn't give you, in many instances, an opportunity to be able to climb within organizations. I don't see it like that for the Pittman or the SAT. I see that the relentless connection and community that exists in the United States of America and that kind of thrusting and support for the entrepreneurs is something that you want to run into. Where is that here from the country? Now, this ain't me pulling down my country. This is me simply saying through constructive criticism, there needs to be opportunity, real opportunity, identified and supported for those of us who are creatives. For those of us who are moving in a different level for the entrepreneurial spirit to support that, and not with a loan of $5,000 that you throw like you salami against the wall and hope it sticks. There needs to be fortification from an education standpoint to talk about financial literacy. How do we expect to change this country if we do the exact same thing? I don't know. We can talk about it as we get back. Let me take this commercial break, guys, and get right back. This is 96.9 FM Radio. Howard Grant and your company, The Foundation. We'll be right back after this.
Foundation. The Foundation. The Foundation.
The Foundation. We'll be back.
When you testify in court, you're expected to tell the truth. Same goes for your insurance application form. If you don't answer every question truthfully, you could be found guilty of misrepresentation. Leaving out just one piece of information on your insurance application can lead to misrepresentation. That means your insurance company could deny your policy or refuse to pay your claim. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, protecting the interests of policyholders.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Guardian Radio and the Foundation are on the move.
Bahamas, this one's for you.
SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Every Thursday, the Foundation with Howard Grant will highlight small businesses throughout the country, far and wide. Your products, services, prices, and personality. We want to hear it all. Get your 30 or 60 second advertisement heard on air at a fraction of the cost. We here at the Foundation understand the times and don't want you to be left behind. With Guardian Radio, you reach your specific demographic and it is unmatched.
We reach thousands daily.
Get your products off the shelf and your services in their hearts. Small Business Thursdays with the Foundation, only on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. For more information, call 302-2300 or the Help Me Howard line at 827-0111. SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Get your business moving today.
The foundation.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant and your company, The Foundation. On this beautiful Thursday, it's a Small Business Thursday, top of the hour. We had a good conversation, great conversation, I believe, with the Disaster Management Unit out of the office of the Prime Minister. And they started to go into some things. I got a text just now. It says, Howard, you want to ask the man from Public Works when they can put up the sign so you can know where to turn left on the red lights. Listen, y'all are absolutely hilarious. The man coming here to talk about hurricanes and disaster. You hear me ask about the red light. You're doing way too much, right? But there's some stuff that we need to be able to put on the table. And we got to be able to have this conversation. Before we go further, I want to say to my sponsors, and, you know, in the spirit of Small Business Thursday, and in this sort of spirit of gratitude for all those persons who relentlessly support us in thought, word, and more specifically, in deed, we want to be able to thank you. And one of those persons is Byron Colley over at the Tiki Hut. Now, you know, Fridays is always Tiki Fridays for be able to do those things. But tomorrow is May 5th, right? Cinco de Mayo, right? So they're going to be celebrating May 5th with a celebration they call Full Moon. It's a Corona Full Moon celebration over at the Tiki Hut from 7 p.m. till 1 a.m. This is wild. From 7 p.m. till 1 a.m. And there's going to have the Pawn Band live performance, fire dances, live DJs, $5 for $25, $5 for $25, and get one free. This is obviously the drink specials. It's going to be wild. It's going to be fun and engaging time for all those persons to be able to go out and celebrate Cinco de Mayo on tomorrow, the 5th of May, for you to be able to do that over at the Tiki Hut. Now, I want to support Byron, and I want to support all those persons that continue to support me. So I want you to go and support him, and do that for me. Do that for me. If this is something that you do and you're looking for those particular things and you want to go out there, just let Byron know and let him know that you come from the Foundation. Pop up, have a good time. This is great stuff. I mean, if this is a thing for you, please. Cinco de Mayo, go check him out and you could be able to do that. Check out Tiki Hut if you want to find out more information from them. Check them out online. Just type in the Tiki Hut, the number will pop up. Give Byron them a call to find out more stuff that they can do if anything's laid out for them. But it's going to be Cinco de Mayo, full moon over at the Tiki Hut tomorrow. So I want to thank you for that. Let me take a telephone call. Caller, you on the line with us live. Go ahead. Go ahead, caller. No? Next caller? Caller on the line with us live. Go ahead. I see you guys are waiting. So I just want to kind of put that out there. Yeah, I see. Listen. These things matter to me, man. I want to be honest with you. I don't talk about things that don't matter. I tell you, I wrestle with these things. I feel like I have aptitude and capability in various other areas that if I wanted to kind of just coast through life, I can do that in another area. I don't have to be on the radio trying to jive you and hopefully somebody could be able to give me a pro bono. Like, I don't believe in that. I don't. I just don't. And who knows what tomorrow will bring. I'm just hoping and I continue to be able to pray that I retain my convictions as I move forward. That is a prayer of mine. That I retain my belief, my convictions, my ideals as I move forward in these particular things. I pray for that. I pray to be able to have decency remain buoyant in my spirit. No matter the tribulation. I try to be as raw and real with myself. I can't lie to me. It don't make no sense. And these issues matter to me. They do. Education matters to me. Opportunity matters to me. Social involvement and political contribution with people with passion, from people with passion and a desire to be able to reform the country, not just to be able to line their pockets, that matters to me. It matters to me. To be able to have a conversation and identify conviction and understand that this is the heart of this individual, it matters to me. And so when I start to talk about these things, I don't want y'all to fight me, man. I want you to contribute and let me know whether or not I'm on the right course. Am I on the right course? Should I be talking about financial literacy, empowerment? Should I be talking about these things? Should I be talking about forging relationships to ensure that the strengthening of our national exams that affords children an opportunity to be able to go from here to the United States of America, to Europe, to other spaces, to be able to expand what they've learned here? This is just incentive. All this is incentive. This is incentive. And I've learned incentive from an American principal in the Starwood Hotel. I learned the power of incentive. We in our community have only identified the power of money, but not understanding incentive. The promise for transition, the promise for growth, we haven't done that enough. We've had it at one point. I mean, the incentives were great at one point. But kids don't even have prom anymore. My son is at one of the schools, the high schools. I got to call the people's name. One of the high schools. And he was hyped up. He said, "Daddy, I want a lime green suit." I say, "For prom? Sir, you wilding out. What are you doing? Huh? Are you going to be like the mad, like Jim Carrey, right?" He said, "Daddy, want a lime green suit or orange one, neon. What are you doing?" He ready to start looking at the suits. And then he comes back to me, "They ain't doing prom no more. This is wild." There's no incentive. There's no social incentive. None. It doesn't always have to have a monetary value attached to it. It just have to be deliberate and you have to commit to it. It has to be an incentive that children could push forward to this thing. We create it within our families. We have to create it within the community. And I'm going to talk like that. All right, let me see if I can read a few more of these texts before we get out of here. It says, "I think it's time for the Bahamian prime minister of full Haitian descent. Like, the parents have to be fully, because the citizenship for full Bahamians holds no water." Wow, this is heavy. And I know that this goes back to some of the information that came forward with the ruling from the Privy Council, right? It says, "We can't make buildings with basements in the Bahamas because the water table is too high." It's what I thought, right? It says, "I don't think that the government should implement a livable wage because it teaches people not to develop themselves to earn more. If you want more, provide a more valuable service or product. And we shouldn't need to increase the wages of politicians to deter them from thiefing. That's laws and enforcement laws are for. And we shouldn't need to increase the wages of politicians." Oh, no, you said it twice. Now, let's just be very clear about these particular things. This is me. What exists in our society is social promotion already. It's here. live and in full effect. You see it in your House of Parliament. You see it in the Senate. You see it within your political organizations. You see it based upon certain people who would have gotten the Queen's honor. You see it within... The only place you may not necessarily see it is where you actually have to work, which is the private sector. Straight up. You could hear the murmuring of technocrats who would have gone off to get their master's degree and come back to an environment where they identify people who've been superseded based upon political expedience. Talk to me, man. Stop playing like these things don't... See, you text these things out of, you know, that's sort of a still water that exists by Lover's Beach on the top level. The froth on the top of your coffee, your frappuccino in the morning. But not understanding the undercurrent that exists. Social promotion exists in the country now. I remember one time ago, if you did not know how to do what you needed to do to get to grade 5, you stayed in grade 4. That's just what it was. Until the people recognized, Jesus, this boy getting too big for grade 4. And then social promotion kicked in. That social promotion, just like the oil from Aaron's bed, ran through our community. And every subsector, you found persons promoted and incapable of doing their job. They just don't know. They don't know. The gentleman said to me, Howard, have you ever been in a roll call for 2 hours? I said, what are you talking about? The man who doing the roll call couldn't read the people's name. 2 hours we was in roll call. I said, what are you talking about? Social promotion exists. A livable wage is a necessity because children didn't ask to be here, but mothers have them and has a responsibility of taking care of them. Stop fighting. And let's grow as a society. Let me take a telephone call. Caller, you on the line with us live. Go ahead.
Hey, good day, Howard.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. Listen, talking about education, you know, I've had an idea for a while now where I see they do these youth programs, but they catch you from junior school going up. And I've always felt like if you start from primary school, because the Bible tells us, train up a child in the way he should grow. You understand? So mm-hmm. if you start from primary school where these children can understand who's learning to read and write and so on and so forth, I think you would have far less crime in this country because you would have more people focusing on, like how you say, teach them money. Teach them how to budget their money. Teach them what they need to do to... Using their lunch money, teach them these things.
That's universal, you know. That's a universal language. Everybody needs to know money.
Exactly. So teach them starting from primary school level, because I see grown children senior school, you giving them their change and they walking off, and I have to say, hold on, check that and tell me if that's right.
And they know.
I'm checking it. They say it's right, but then I'm looking at it knowing it's not right.
Don't give them some nickels and dimes.
I teach them it.
Don't give them nickels and dimes. They confuse all day. They say, all right, we be good. God got me.
The pennies should have stayed because they know how to count those and the dollar bill.
Praise God.
You understand? So I'm so sorry for saying it like that, but the Minister of Education needs to implement some kind of financial program in these schools. Come on. I mean, look at the way this country is going. What are they waiting for? They're waiting for us to crash and burn?
That's it.
Start teaching, even those, police cadets and all them other stuff. Start them from primary school. Come on, you know how much young men you can
catch. I agree with you 100%.
You know how much young men you can catch starting from, say, grade 5?
I agree with you 100%.
And because the ones in grade 2, 3, and 4, 1, 2, 3, and 4, they're going to see that. They're going to want to be in that.
Let's see. That's incentive.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
That's a social incentive.
Exactly.
It ain't always
something there that's going to encourage them young boys. Hold on. I come in with you this evening, boy. I will watch them there. I will watch them to win this. I will see them to win that. You would be surprised how much more. I've been saying this for a while. How much more kids you can catch starting at the primary level. By the time they hit junior school, they don't finish.
That's it. I appreciate your telephone call, my dear. You did a great thing to the country. I think it's important. I think we had a conversation also. I see some person saying, Howard, I can't get in. Call again. Let me give you the numbers. Please give me a call. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259 anywhere from the family of violence. This is a toll-free number, 242-300-5720. And hit me up on the text, 422-4796. Let me see if I can read a few more of these texts. It says, due to the high water tables caused for the basements, it would be prohibitive. This is the information that's coming through. There's a caller that we got on the line. Caller, you on the line with us live? Go ahead.
Hey, Howard.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. Amos Junior Miller here, sir.
Hey, what's up, Amos?
I'm fine, thank God for life. Boy, a lot is being said in our country,
mm-hmm.
about our country, on behalf of our people. But I need you to do me a favor, Guardian Radio especially. If you're serious about what you're going to be talking about for the rest of the year, please, Bahamian people have limited amount of money. That's what the show is about. That's what every day. And how are we going to move forward? Now, we need all radio stations. Communication will save you or communication will destroy you. We need all radio stations to allow the Bahamian people who they say are financially challenged to be allowed to call into these shows using WhatsApp.
Well, using WhatsApp. I like this.
Y'all have a nice day.
I like what you're saying. You're heavy, but you don't have to use WhatsApp. You buy your phone from Alive. You buy your phone from BTC, wherever you get your phone from. Alive is my sponsor. Let's just be decent, right? You buy your phone from Alive, right? And you call 242-300-5720. It is, if you don't understand what toll-free is, that means it ain't cost you nothing. Amen? So use that. You ain't got to use these particular services from external entities. You could use that service and still be able to reach the reach us toll-free in this particular capacity. Now, if you find that your minute's gone after, call Howard. Shoot me a text. Take a picture, screenshot, send it to me. Howard, I had $2.45 when I call you. Now I got $1.08. Whatever, right? And then I could be able to present it to management and say to them, hey, listen, let's check this toll-free line out. But our toll-free line is 242-300-5720. Okay? So we can be able to do that, right? There's the next text that came through. It says, building a building with a basement with no hills and a high water table. Okay. Oh, okay, texter. There's a text that's coming through. It says, hello. Top two reasons are you need to rethink depending on foreign investment. What happens when their agendas don't align with ours? And what if they get tired of dealing with hurricanes? I think in every quadrant of the world, there is an external disaster, natural disasters, and environmental concerns that any investor has to be able to take into consideration when he or she is, or the entity is actually going to invest in that particular space. Ours is not only hurricanes, it is also the financial budget that they have to set aside based upon the alleged paying off of certain... Man, talk to me. I can't even get no amen. They incorporate that. This is information that is known. They incorporate, when coming to third world, not just the Bahamas, when coming to third world countries ruled by black men, many of them, not all, let's be decent, many of them put a little shave a little aside because this is one of the opportunities and threats that exist. You take a SWOT analysis of any environment that you go in and you have to take these real assessments or whether or not this is significant. Take that proverbial bribe or alleged bribe. Let's be decent. The agenda is no longer in the hands of the Bahamian people or the government. They run the show. They make a determination. And everything is only for show after that. But at the end of the day, no matter how we see the significant pushback, the government will side with those particular people because you have been bought with a price. Don't talk to me. Y'all just don't want talk, you know. You don't want talk. You say, oh my God, I can't believe Howard say that. All of us know this. This is public knowledge and information. And when we place allegations against it, speculations, and we continue to be able to hear this bubbling up in our society. Now, we could say this is a conspiracy theory, but why is our finances eroding? Why is this particular thing happening? Why do our governments collectively take on this particular position that goes contrary to the will of the people? Why? Something have to be afoot. Let's see if you can be able to read a few more of these texts. So it says, basements are a no-go. That was probably your student. You didn't need to say the... You didn't need to kind of diss the fellow. You didn't need... We just having a good conversation. You don't got to diss the fellow. Stop it. Stop it. Stop being indecency. This is how I agree with the caller about the students checking their change. We have a D average for a reason. An uneducated population is easy to manage. So this is Howard. I went to a store to get some copies done. The cost was 25 cents, and I got 10 copies. The sales rep turns around and gets a calculator. The sales rep turns around and gets a calculator. So I look at her and I say, are you serious? There's a text that people said to me. Or if you teach the children financial programs in the primary school, they would be financially literate and financially and would be able to make money. These systems are by design, right? I agree with you 100%. It says, tell the texter, I hope they are right and I'm wrong because we've been having a lot of strange weather, right? That's the information that's coming through. But you have to remember something, texter, you know, as it relates to the basements, because this is the guy who texts with the basement, person who texts with the basement. In Tornado Alley in the United States of America, if you look at the destruction post a tornado, right? The only fortified structure that they have there is their basement. That's it. If you look at their houses and the building code that exists, which I think is wild for me, I think it's crazy, right? Every single year, you keep putting up the same 2x4. Every single year, you keep coming back for the same compressed wood. Every single year, you keep doing the exact same. The building material becomes more flimsy over the years. Very topical. It doesn't have that kind of girth that we know of here in this country. And so when you look at Tornado Alley in the United States of America and the relentless hurricanes that comes down, I was watching a documentary the other day that says that in Tornado Alley in the United States of America, it has 94% of the world's tornadoes. And the other 6% happens, you know, sparsely in other spaces. But 94% of the world's tornadoes happens in Tornado Alley. And all this information, one, people keep getting back there to live. Two, they keep building these flimsy homes. So when you start to have conversations about the necessity for being able to have an underground structure, it's because of the environment that exists. You only say that based upon what you've seen, but not taking into assessment that our homes could take on the world. These homes here in this country, I've watched growing up that, you remember the clapboard house that you build with the TNG? You know, you got the TNG and we used to call it clapboard house. As years progressed, they put a mesh over it and start to, you know, put Duroc over the front and just start to, you know, plaster it like that. But the truth is that those homes could withstand much more than the homes that you see in Tornado Alley. So I agree with the text. I don't know whether or not we need to go underground. I believe, and I didn't want to get too deep into the conversation with the Ministry of Disaster or the Disaster Management Unit, but I believe that this sort of global change, shifting as it relates to global warming and the increase of sea level, so forth and so on, I'd like to know more about this revised bill, if that's going to incorporate certain elements. Because I remember the hurricane, man, and I heard the stories of persons being able to emerge out of the pine forest after the hurricanes. I remember these stories. Persons saying that they held on for the entire night. We heard a few of these stories where persons say, I can't remember her name, out of Grand Bahama. I know her, you know. She said she lost a husband and a child. I remember a few hurricanes back when there was sort of a seawall came in 8 Mile Rock on the southern side. and swooped into this house apartment that was close to the sea line, where we have the bay in Admaroc. Pulled in, and you know, pulled the family out, and the baby died. I remember these things, right? And in remembering those things, I'm always concerned about the next dispensation. I think we pay a lot of, we talk a lot in this country. We talk way too much, right? And in talking so much, it deflects it from the action. I think we've become content with the conversation without the expectation that there's actually work that's going to be done. And we got to do something about that. We have to be doing to do something about that. I want to read something for you. Can I read this? Let's see. Yes, I'm going to talk about this tomorrow as it relates to the Privy Council and the information. I know we lit up the lines. A lot of persons are talking about it. We're seeing a great deal of things as it relates to this particular position. Give me some time. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. And I really want to be able to get an expert's opinion to be able to talk about those things. This is Howard. If I build my basement, tell the texter, don't come knocking on my door for help. Sir, let's be very clear. In a low-lying area, let's say hypothetically you live in Pinewood. Hypothetically. All the Pinewood water would be in your basement. All. Hypothetically. I don't know what we're talking about, right? So it goes, this is, I had $2 million on the phone before texting. All right, guys. It's been a beautiful show today. And I want to talk more about these things. There's a lot of things happening in the country that I think is going to shift the direction that we take. And it's going to lead to more introspection. I think we have the responsibility of being able to look at a few things. You know, this texter's texting me right now and saying, Howard, we should have had more of an in-depth conversation about the Privy Council's position. And I do agree with them, but I plan to have this kind of a conversation with you tomorrow. I have a great guest coming in also. And I want to be able to take it there and talk about those things. Tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, I have none other than Craig Flowers from FML that's going to be in the studio with me tomorrow to talk about some things. Now, what I intended to do is we've seen some information coming out from the 50th anniversary secretariat talking about a return to idealism. And they have, I think it's Sir Bertram. I keep saying that. I mean, look at the flyer. But I know they have Frankie Wilson being able to speak to these particular things. And they're going to be having that conversation next week, Tuesday. I wanted to prelude that conversation with Mr. Flowers. So he reached out to me this morning and we kind of booked it up. And I'm very excited to be able to host him. He and I spoke on many occasions down at the golf course and talking about those things. So you're in for a significant treat tomorrow. Laid back day, but we're going to dive into it with Craig Flowers tomorrow and talk about those things nationally. I need to know more about how men of yesteryear coming out of a time of segregation was able to do what they did. And I'm sure he's going to talk to us about Lebanon and living in that particular area for a long time. I'm excited about it. I hope you are also. And I want to thank you so much for participating. Guys, this is Small Business Thursday. And if you want to be a part of this next week, Thursday, I got some persons booked already. But if you want to be a part of it, please give me a call, 827-0111, 827-0111. Be a part of this next week, Thursday, Small Business Thursday, to talk about your business, to talk about the direction, to talk about even the innovation and ideas for transformation and growth in this country. I thank you. Thank you for your participation. And I hope that we can continue to be able to drive the nail right, boy, and hit it on the head as it relates to this national conversation for growth and development, and really be able to spill into the spirits and minds of our leadership now and those into the future. I thank you. Thank you so very kindly for your participation. I'll see you tomorrow right here on 96.9 FM Radio Foundation with Howard Grant. Stick and stay, ladies and gentlemen, for none other and Shivago Lang. I gotta interview Shivago one of these days. I got nothing but questions for him. So we can see if we can be able to do it. He says, Howard, whenever you're ready. We're going to make that thing happen. 96.9 FM radio, guys. Have a beautiful day. We're going to see you tomorrow.
The foundation.
This is Foundation Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.